Welcome to Sports and a Slice of Life. And now, here's your host, Dave Lewis.
How's it going? Thank you for stopping by to check in today. And thank you for helping our podcast grow exponentially with iHeartRadio, with Google Play, with Apple Podcasts and YouTube. It's all because of you. So thank you so much. We appreciate your subscriptions. Your five-star reviews and comments certainly means a lot. Hey, coming up, we are going to talk with Chris Filippi, former newscaster at KCBS, now with Bay Area Rapid Transit. He had this unbelievable physical accomplishment that will really inspire you to take your game to the next level. We had that conversation right after the debate, Biden versus Trump, part two. So we'll get into the athletic achievement, but we'll talk debate first. Here's Chris Filippi. Always great catching up with old friends. Chris Filippi from Bay Area Rapid Transit with us. How's it going?
Very good. How are you?
We're great. I wanted to wait to record the podcast until the debate was over. Well, first of all, what did you think? What did you think? I mean, did you score it like I did? And
like a prize fight. It's interesting to watch. I mean, especially in comparison to the first debate. This one felt, I think, much more like a traditional presidential debate. Now, certainly the characters are a bit different here, but in terms of structure, the way it flowed, it just felt much more like a regular debate. And I think you have to give a lot of credit in this case to one, the format, but two, the moderator. Much more in control tonight, very focused. You had a few topics, and I was actually, I have to say, I think muting the microphones for that opening statement for each of the main categories really made a difference.
I don't know that, I mean, maybe the fact they knew it was muted, they weren't going to try to interrupt, but I was trying to get the body language of each person speaking and seeing if the other person was going to try to interrupt where it could be just, you know, off mic. And especially Trump, I mean, I'll give him credit for, you know, kind of biting his tongue there. His advisors gave him some good messages and good advice. And all in all, I thought it was a pretty compelling night.
Yeah, I think the voters actually had a chance to really get something out of this. It wasn't a food fight like the first time out. And I think when it comes to the Trump camp, they looked at what happened the first time and felt they needed a different approach. And I think when you look at it from the Biden camp's perspective, I think for them, they feel like they're well ahead in this race. And really, it's a matter of just play your game, essentially, if you want to use a sports comparison. Kind of go with the old North Carolina four corners offense and kill the clock, if you will. So you're not going to be in a big hurry to jump if you're in that situation. You just kind of want to stay in your own space and stick to your game plan. And I think there's something that both of the candidates can pull out of this evening.
I was watching to see how Trump would try to go to the Hunter Biden card. And you knew he was going to go to it two or three times and sometimes even breaking off the original topic to try to throw it in there to appeal to his Fox News and Proud Boys players. But it clearly was part of the game plan to get that in tonight on multiple levels.
Yeah, and it felt almost like a Hail Mary this late in the game and trying to get people to jump on it. And the real problem, I think, with that particular story, aside from the sourcing, which seems to be dubious at this point, and that may well change if new information comes out, but I think the real problem is, if you're an undecided voter or you're someone who doesn't really follow politics that closely and you just kind of parachute in on this debate, you have no idea what they're talking about. You don't know that background. You don't know the details. And a story like that might play really well on social media when you're talking to your base. I think it plays less well to a broader audience like you get in a debate. It doesn't hit that core, just easily understood message that you're really looking for to cut through in something like this.
Especially when you're looking for an undecided voter that's sitting there saying, okay, how is my life going to be better with you in office? You know, how am I going to get my job back? What are you going to do about the pandemic?
Well, and I think that was a Biden strategy, really. You look at how he handled himself. A lot of his messaging was speaking directly to the voter, just ignoring Trump, speaking directly to the camera, and essentially talking past the president. And I think that was their whole approach with the Hunter Biden stuff, is just the idea that, one, most people aren't going to really know that much about it, and talk past it. People don't care about Hunter Biden. They don't care about my family or your family. They care about their family. And that was the message that came through to me tonight from Joe Biden.
I scored it 90-83, the second round a draw, and Biden winning every round, and then of course flooring Trump on coronavirus because he's going to the hole. The only reason we have all the cases is because of all the testing. And if I hear that one more time, my head's going to explode.
Well, I think
that's a 2-point round right there.
Right. The way I look at it, I didn't see any clean knockdowns per se, but I think at the end of this, when you're really talking about the impact and how it really influences this race, to me, this was the sort of event that most people are going to completely forget about by Monday. And I think if I'm Joe Biden and every poll shows me ahead, that's exactly what I want.
The goal tonight was not to mess it up.
Yeah, and I don't think you had any, oh my God, I can't believe he said that moments. I mean, certainly both candidates had their share of, ooh, probably should have phrased that differently. Biden talking about getting away from oil, that could be problematic. Both of them had moments like that. You mentioned Trump on the coronavirus. That's obviously a very difficult topic for him. Very challenging subjects for these folks. But I think in terms of just pure takeaways, it's actually going to move voters at this point. When every poll seems to indicate that there are very few undecideds left, I'm just skeptical that that debate's going to have a huge impact on how things turn out November 3rd.
Yeah, I love the phrase baked in. Our opinions are baked in at this point. So there's nothing pretty much that could be said to a Biden voter that's going to get them to change if they're fully committed. And obviously for the Trump base, nothing's going to deter you, no matter all the lies, all the fact checking. It doesn't matter. Yeah, he's your guy.
And every hour that goes by, you can say the votes are baked in. We're approaching about 50 million votes that have been cast already. It's setting a record for early voting, be it in person or absentee. It's a very weird scenario in this case where you have so many people voting early. And then you also have this final debate happening very late in the cycle. We're now going to be tomorrow, 11 days out from the election. It's very rare to have a debate so close to quote unquote election day. I mean, it's election day already across the country. So the idea that this is really going to sway a lot of people, I mean, time will tell. I'm skeptical.
Hey, I want to ask you one thing because I haven't turned in my ballot yet. And the one issue that I go back and forth on is the whole Proposition 22 with the Uber drivers.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I mean, that's one that's gotten a lot of interest. And I found myself just as a voter, and it's interesting to look at it differently just as a regular voter as opposed to a news reporter who's interviewing folks involved with all of the various propositions and everything. But one thing I've always felt, and I feel like I felt it more this year, the ballot is just so long. And there are so many propositions, especially here in California with our system, where really anybody who has enough money can get a proposition qualified for the ballot because you spend the money to get the folks out there to gather the signatures. And it's really just a matter of time and resources, although candidly more challenging now in the midst of a pandemic. But even with that, look at all the propositions that we have out there. And I wonder how many voters really take the time to sit down and go over it and really do their homework, because we're talking about big money. We're talking about very important issues. And I'm always struck by just how challenging it must be if someone really wants to take this seriously and put the work in.
Yeah. In fact, I spent a few minutes just on that one proposition alone, going back and forth, and each side made a pretty compelling argument. But the bottom line is no makes them employees. Yes means stay independent contractors.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, there are compelling arguments on both sides, and there are even different ways to look at what's the best cure if you're part of that camp that believes that the original law is a problem. How do you go about fixing it? Is this proposition the best way to do it? Or should this be something that the lawmakers try to take on, as difficult as it is with all of these competing resources? And of course, they're relying on their donors to get elected. So they're trying to be very careful. And it's almost like in California, a lot of times what happens when you get these really contentious issues, especially when you're talking about big donors like Uber and Lyft and whatnot, and you just go right down the line for various special interest groups, it's almost like, well, you know, it might be safer to kick it to the voters and let's just see what they say.
I've got to focus. I'm seeing my post-debate coverage in the background and Trump saying, I'm the least racist person in the room. And I remember watching that, rolling my eyes, saying, okay, he's going to go to that whole I've done more for the African-American community since Abraham Lincoln card. And sure enough, he brought it out. Automatic 10-8 round to Biden for the load of crap.
And I think you get that a lot from Trump. You hear all the stories about how he doesn't really put a lot of time into traditional debate prep, where you're sitting down with a group of advisors and you have someone portraying your opponent and you do the whole formal event. Here are the topics. Here are the questions. Here are the mannerisms of your opponent. I mean, that's essentially what Biden's been doing for several days, as I understand. But Trump doesn't really do that. He kind of goes back to his rally speech. and just adapts it to the format. And what you hear at a Trump rally is going to be very similar to what you hear at a debate. And I don't think tonight was any exception. All of the Trump rallies, he always compares himself to Abraham Lincoln and talks about what he's accomplished for the African-American community. So it's no surprise it would come up again tonight.
One thing he left out in the debate that he said the other day was if Biden's elected, Biden will eliminate the Christmas season.
Well, the war on Christmas, I mean, that's something, you know, you're checking your base, the boxes for your base, right?
God, man. Anyway, I didn't even get you on to talk about the debate.
No.
I mean, I've known you for 30 years, going back to college radio doing sports. Chris Filippi, longtime news reporter for KCBS, worked up in Seattle, now working for Bay Area Rapid Transit. But you blew my mind because I was following social media and you pulled off this unbelievable accomplishment, 48 miles running in 48 hours. I mean, what made you think of that?
You know, well, the inspiration was a guy by the name of David Goggins, who's a former Navy SEAL. I know you're familiar with him. And he came up with this challenge, and it's called the 4x4x48 challenge. And essentially what it is you run 4 miles every 4 hours for 48 hours. And just on the surface of it, that sounds crazy. And it absolutely, by the way, sounds like something a Navy SEAL would come up with because it's that crazy. And I stumbled across it because I happened to be preparing to do my first marathon, which I did back at the end of July. And just to kind of set that up, basically what I did is I had never run a marathon before. I ran the San Francisco half marathon last year, and I decided, okay, I'm going to really push myself, and I'm going to do the San Francisco full marathon, which was supposed to be in late July. Well, of course, COVID. And I just made the call that regardless of that, I set this up as a goal, and I'm going to go run this marathon. I'm going to do it by myself, and I'm going to just set up my own course. I'm not going to necessarily go to the San Francisco course, but I'm going to run 26.2 miles because I've wanted to do this my whole life, and no time like the present. So as I was preparing for that, I started to hear about this guy and I started to hear about this challenge. And it was like, it just blew my mind that it was out there. And then the other thing is I did my homework on it and I kind of went down the YouTube wormhole, as one can do on many things. You start seeing all these videos of folks that have tried it. It's one of the few challenges where people are creating videos talking about how they tried and failed. You know, most of the times it's like, oh, yeah, I knocked that out. I did the 100 push-ups in 30 days and did them every day. And yeah, you know, it went great. This one, people are crying. Like, oh, my God, I can't move my legs. It's day two. I've run 28 miles and I can't move. It's like, oh, wow, this is a hell of a thing.
How does that sound appealing then, watching all those videos and these people dying and vomiting and cramping up? Hey, how do I do that?
Yeah, you know, the thing was, like, when I first discovered it was pre-marathon for me, and it just didn't sound appealing at all. And my whole mindset at that point was, you know, I just want to get through this marathon, training hard for it, so let's just get through that. What I didn't know was how that was going to change me and how much I was going to experience in those 5 hours and what I was going to take out of that. Because going into it, I was like, you know what? I'm probably going to run it. And I know I'm stubborn enough that no matter what, I'm going to finish it. I may have to walk it, but I'm going to finish that damn thing because it's a goal I've set. But I kind of figured once I was done with that, then I was going to be just done with running for a while. And I was going to take a break. And I had no idea when the next big thing for me was going to be in terms of really challenging myself. But what surprised me was I was hungry that night. I found myself starting to look back at times that people in my age group ran the San Francisco full in last year. And I was like trying to figure, okay, what can I do to improve on that? And then I started to gravitate back towards the 4x4x48. And I started to think that this is something I wanted to take on because I was hungry. I was in a different mindset, and going through that marathon and running that by myself for those 5 hours, it was a transitional experience for me.
At what point during the marathon do you feel like, man, if I could just go this much farther, I can make it, but right now I'm dying?
Yeah, you know, it was funny. For me, it was probably mile 23. And I was really happy with myself and how I did my homework because, you know, as you're training for a marathon, obviously you're running up miles. And the longest training run that I did was 18 miles. And I did not prepare well for that. In other words, I wasn't hydrated well enough, and I didn't fuel myself during the run. So you do what a runner calls you bonk, you hit the wall. And I hit the wall during that training run. And I really put in the time to try and learn about what my body needed, the proper fueling during the event to keep going. And I made that transition, and it really helped me out. And the other thing that really helped me out actually is one of my very good friends, actually out of nowhere, he knew I was doing this, but out of nowhere, a week before my run, volunteered to basically help me out and support me. I was blown away. And I was like, well, dude, I'm going to start at 5 a.m. on Sunday. So I don't expect you to be out there. I'm probably going to take about 5 hours. You show up at like 8 or 8:30. Oh my God, that'd be amazing. You could help me, you know, get water, you know, bring supplies. You know, if something bad happens, you're there. It's great. He's like, no, I'll be there at 5, dude. I'll see you then.
And so what does he do then? Does he follow you on the course in a car or something? How does that work?
So I planned it all out, right? So what I did is I set up a course where I ran on the Bay Trail on the peninsula. I live in Belmont. So the stretch that I ran was essentially between Belmont, Foster City, and as far north as Burlingame. And I didn't just go like 13 miles one way and 13 miles the other way. I broke it down. So I would go 4 miles one way and then come back, right? And that gets me 8. And so I had a base of operations where I had all of my stuff. And what I was originally planning to do is I was just going to have like water and fuel and whatnot in the trunk of my car. And, you know, you just go and jog and do what you need to do. But having someone there was just invaluable, you know, because this is not a controlled course necessarily, you know, with support staff all along it like a traditional race. And, you know, you don't have the benefit also, and I'm sure you know what I'm talking about with this. When you're doing an athletic event like this, it's great to have other competitors, you know, to inspire you, to see other people sweating and working hard and going through the same thing you are is very empowering. And when you don't have it, you notice it.
Yeah. I've done only the half marathon, about 6 or 7 of them, and I've run them, almost all of them, with Roberta Gonzalez.
Oh, she's great.
And so you do, you're right, you have that team support with you. Hey, you know, let's kind of slow down a little bit this mile or two. You know, we got a hill coming or whatever, but you have that dialogue, you have the encouragement, you've got that extra, you know, person to rely on their energy to pull you across the finish line.
Yeah. And candidly, I mean, I had never run 26 miles. So there was a certain fear factor for me too. I was like, okay, I've done 18. I feel pretty good, but you know what? I'm 46. I've never done this before. How is this going to go? And what happens if something goes wrong? You know, and it's not like an organized race where you have first aid tents and you have, you know, all kinds of people watching you. So I was nervous. I was very nervous. And it was just great to push through all of that and get to that goal. And it's, you know, we all go through a different experience in this time with COVID. And one of those experiences for me is I've always been athletic in terms of I work out regularly. I've always been very good about that, but I have not always been good about pushing myself. And it goes right back to what I said about David Goggins. I mean, when you're talking about motivation to push yourself, I mean, that's the source. And that's where I feel like I've really had this mental transformation the last few months.
Those that don't know the David Goggins story, you know, Navy SEAL, you know, grew up in a, you know, really dysfunctional family, was really overweight, didn't have a lot going for him. And he became one of the world's most badass athletes and really is just an example of mental toughness. You know, one of the things I got from his book, Can't Hurt Me, was motivation is crap. And I thought, well, what do you mean by that? He goes, well, you know, you don't always feel like doing it. You know, but the most successful people don't always get this burst of motivation, inspiration to do it. Oh, I said, I was just motivated. No, you have to do that shit when you don't feel like doing it.
Yeah, that's 100% it. You know, you feel motivated after you watch a big game or you see a movie and it's really inspiring, but that goes away. What I think he's really talking about is, say you're doing a marathon. Okay, so you're at mile 20. How do you feel? What are you going to do about it? You know, that's drive. That's from within. That's deeper. That's how you're wired. And one of the most empowering things I take from him, it's actually two things. One, he'll tell you, you know, I suck at running. I'm no good at this, but I put the work in. You know, I find that really empowering. And then the other thing is, there's not some like magical day you arrive at where it's like, oh, working out's easy. This is simple. You know, oh, I've got that magic feeling now where I just roll out of bed and it's easy. No, it's a challenge. If you're doing it right, it's a challenge. And every day you've got to get yourself up. You've got to use that drive, you know, to answer the bell. And that's one of the things that really appealed to me about the 4x4x48 is essentially what you're doing. I mean, you're not taking a punch, right? I mean, you're not in a ring, but there are similarities to a boxing match in that you need to answer the bell, not once, not twice. You need to do it 12 times. And you cannot account for how your body is going to feel as you get deeper and deeper into it. You can't account for how your stomach is going to feel. You can't account for how you're going to feel about a lack of sleep. How you haven't had time to take a shower, how your body basically stays hot throughout the whole experience. You don't really calm down, how that's going to feel on your joints with all that running. And really what I had to learn, and I learned through training, is how it feels to stop and start running. I mean, most people that run, you go do a, you know, 5 mile, 10 mile, whatever run, you do it all in one in session. You know, you don't break it up. You don't say, okay, I'm going to go do 4 miles now, and then in 4 hours, I'll do another four, and then four, another four after that. You know, it's very different. It's a very different experience for your body. And it was a hell of a challenge, I'll tell you.
How do you train for that? What's the map to, you know, prepare for that 4x4 over the 48 hours? I mean, you're running with very little sleep, if any, and you have to mm-hmm. pace yourself. And that's, I mean, how do you I could train for a marathon and you kind of lay out the miles over the course of a month or two, but something like that is totally bizarre.
Yeah, you could find 100 marathon training programs out there and they all got nice charts and week 10 is this and week 11 is that. I don't know about any charts for the 4x4x48, but I'll tell you what I did is I ended up just, I appreciated what a challenge it would be for me to do multiple runs in a day because I knew how much I hated the sensation of doing a long run and stopping for like a bathroom break or to recharge, get some fuel. I hate that feeling of like stopping for 2 or 3 minutes and then restarting again. It feels like it takes your body time. And so what I ended up doing to prepare for this is I started doing a bunch of 4 mile runs on the weekends. So what I would do when I first started on a Saturday is I did 3 4-mile runs, and I did one at 4 a.m., 8 a.m., and midnight. I'm sorry, noon, excuse me. So I did that. And then I'd come back on Sunday the next day, and I'd do two. I'd do 4 a.m., 8 a.m., and just kind of build up from there. And I got to the point where about 2 weeks out, I had on Saturday, I did 5 4-mile runs, and then on that Sunday, I did 3. So I felt like I was really like in the neighborhood with being able to do it. And I felt like I was getting really comfortable with, okay, don't freak out. That's the other thing he talks about. Don't let your mind freak out over pain. You know, and I know that sounds, you know, like phony tough guy stuff, but with this guy, I mean, he walks the walk. And it's really true is that you just kind of like, okay, there's a difference between feeling injured and having tired legs. And I really tried to get used to the idea that tired legs were okay. All I had to do was get myself moving. And about, you know, about a half mile in, it would actually feel okay and I could move on. And I got myself used to that and accepting that mentally. And then that made it much easier to actually do this thing.
So you only did it on weekends then for training?
Yeah, I would still do runs during the week. I would do a run on Tuesday and I would do a run on Thursday, but it would just be one run in the morning.
Yeah, not the 4 miles no. separated by 4 hours.
No, I've got a job.
Yeah, I know.
It's only so much we could do. So no, but I really focused on the weekends. And I have to say I was nervous because I tried to do – I had that peak weekend that I mentioned. And then after that, I was like, okay, I'm going to do a taper like you do for a marathon. You kind of taper down 2 weeks out. So I was doing a taper and I did a 4 a.m. run. But this was during the time when the air quality was just awful in the Bay Area. Everybody remembers how bad it was. So I was really trying to hunt for places where I could go where it actually was okay. So the problem with that, though, is I was going to places that I was unfamiliar with. So anyway, long story short, on that weekend, two weekends right before, I ended up twisting my ankle and pulling a calf muscle because I was out running at 4 a.m. in a spot I wasn't really familiar with. So that's, I had to postpone it for a couple of weeks to make sure that I was confident in my body that I could, you know, make a real run at doing this thing. Because when you're running 48 miles, you can't fake the confidence on that. You've got to have some belief or you're going to have no chance whatsoever at it.
Do you, in your training, you know, try to trim down your weight? Cause you're, you know, really ripped. You got, you know, good physique, good muscle. Does it help to have the muscle mass, or are you trying to, you know, lean out for something like this?
Yeah. I kind of approach it like Goggins, you know, I'm not going to stop lifting. I'm going to keep going. I mean, you want that strength, you want that upper body strength. And one of the things I benefited from is I had no pain at all in my upper body. Like a lot of times when you run, you'll kind of get sore in your lower back, you know, that sort of thing, or you'll get cramps. I never had any issues with that. But the other thing I've noticed for myself is instead of just pursuing mass, I've been much more interested in pursuing kind of like, I mean, I'm not in his league, but in a kind of a body type like his, where it's just really good at handling your own body weight. For example, when I lift right now, I have a whole home gym set up in our garage now because I haven't been to my old 24-hour gym since March. I had to get a chin up and a dip station, and I just got that like 6 or 7 weeks ago. It's been great. So you do a lot of pull-ups, you do dips, you do push-ups, all that sort of thing. Just getting really good at controlling your own body weight.
Have you done the Murphy CrossFit workout, which is...
No, I've heard of it, but I haven't tried it.
So 5 pull-ups, 10 push-ups, 15 squats, 20 rounds of it back to back to back. And that's sandwiched by a mile run at each end.
Yeah. No, I'm familiar with it, and full respect to the CrossFit folks. One thing I try to emphasize in my training with the pull-ups are a weakness because I wasn't doing them for a while. So I'm trying to build that up. Is I'm really trying to do deadweight pull-ups. In other words, with CrossFit, a lot of times you're kind of getting your full body motion into it. Like if you watch those competitions, you know, it's incredible what they do.
Stupid. I don't like those kipping. They're too violent, right?
You're
jerking your shoulder and give me a momentum.
Give me a good military style dead weight, 100% defeating your body weight pull up, and your numbers will be way down compared to anything you'll see in CrossFit. But who cares? You know, that's an authentic move.
So, how does an event like this, or even the marathon, and you're adding on the 4x4x48 hours, what does it do for your life in terms of looking at challenges outside of being fit?
Oh, it's so amazing. It really is. And it's fun, you know, going back to when this whole COVID thing started in March, I started to work out at home. Like I said, I always went to the gym, but I was just kind of, you know, treading water, really. You know, I was very good at being consistent, but I wasn't really good at putting out a max effort. And nobody knew what to expect. So I was like, okay, you know, I'll do this for a month or two, and then I'm sure we'll be back. Well, you know, history says otherwise. And for me, I just got to a point where I was starting to put on weight. I think a lot of people have gone through that, where you're working at home, the fridge is right there. All of a sudden, you used to just drink on the weekends, but maybe you have a drink during the week, and then maybe it's a couple of nights. And then next thing you know, you've put on 15 pounds. You know, and I had that experience. And I just got to the point as I was getting closer to this marathon, about month and a half, 2 months out, where I said, you know what, screw it. I'm making the call right now. I had a moment, and it's like, you know what, I'm going to get myself in the best shape of my life. And that's all there is to it. No excuses. Put the work out, put the work in, and get this done. You know, I always used to think that you needed to go to the gym to accomplish that, but it's all mindset and it's all a willingness to do things that make you uncomfortable. And I know I say a lot of things that Goggins says, but it really conforms a lot to some of the ideas I already had in my mind, and it just kind of confirms it. You know, like running at 4 a.m. You gotta be crazy to run at 4 a.m., right? But no, I mean, put in the work. You're just making excuses. Do it. Just go do it. You don't have to be good at it, but you do have to do it. And if you can do that little bit that makes you uncomfortable, you take that with you. Because one of the reasons I wanted to do the 4x4x48 is I wanted to find out about myself. And you could talk a big game about yourself. You could talk about mental toughness and all these things. Okay, so let's see what you have. Let's see what you have at Sunday at noon It's 95 degrees outside. You've already done 9 4-mile runs. You've done 36 miles and you're dead tired. And you know what? All your friends are sitting around at home watching football. They're having a drink. They're relaxing. And you're sitting there trying to figure out, okay, am I going to go run in this heat? Where am I going to go? How am I going to do this? When am I going to eat? You know, my legs are sore. I'm tired. All these things. You haven't slept at all. Can you go at that point? And if the answer is yes, and you do it, it doesn't matter how slow you are. It matters that you did it. And then you could just take that with you. And when life craps on you, as it does for all of us at some point, you have that. And it's like, okay, take a breath, relax. And remember, you're the crazy guy who did that. And the long list of people that can do that same thing is real short. And just remember that, and you take that with you. And so that's what I got out of it as much as anything is, can you answer that bell? And if you can, then, you know, it gets back to what he talks about with the mental cookie jar. It's I'm a big believer in that. You take that with you. You know, we all go through things in life, right? And if you can have that, like, it's not, you know, I talked about, you can't fake confidence when it comes to doing these things. I once you do them, dude, 48 miles. How many people run 48 miles in a year, 2 years, much less in 1 weekend, much less with a run at midnight, 2 runs at midnight, you know?
You couldn't map out the whole sleep strategy though, right? So how did that work?
No, not at all.
Sleep 1 hour in between the 4 hours. How'd that work?
That's one of the things I love about it. And I've gotten far enough away from it where I actually would do it again, but I won't do it until next year. That was one where I was done with is like, okay, screw that. That's going on the shelf. I'm not doing that again. Actually, now, you know what? In about 6 months, I'll be ready to do that again. But you have to be super disciplined, which is where I think this is especially something that is like a SEAL challenge, in that you have to have that mindset. You know what? I'm really going to take care of myself. I'm going to fuel properly. I'm going to stretch before and after every time. I'm going to ice all the time. I'm going to take real good care of my body. I'm going to have it all prepared. I had like all my fuel laid out. I had my different socks, different running outfits. I had my nightlight thing out that I run with, all this vest and stuff, all of it all laid out, ready to go. I had a whiteboard to mark down each of the runs that I did. And I had a map in my mind of where I was going to do each 4 mile run, because I didn't want to just do the same, you know, 4 miles over and over and over again. And the challenge with sleep with it is, one, you don't really know when your body is going to be ready for that. And two, the runs are so close together that, as I said earlier, your body never fully cools down. So you're never at that state of relaxation. So really what you're chasing are naps. There's no like deep REM sleep at all. And you just, again, you kind of have it in your head, I've got to be up. Because I mean, really think about it. Say you do a run at midnight, say it takes 40 minutes and say you went somewhere. So really from midnight to 1 a.m., you're occupied with your run. So you have from 1 a.m. to 4 a.m., so you really only have 3 hours to recover and do it again. So, you know, as a radio guy, you back time everything. You really appreciate that 180 minutes you have, and every minute counts. You know, it's like, okay, even if I can't fall asleep just laying here with my eyes closed, I'm going to get value out of this. And that's what tripped people up, as I saw people going through the experience and talking about it and sharing it on YouTube, is they would go really well that first day, but then the reality would start to set in. And it's not that they would totally quit all the time, although a lot of people kind of got broken by it, but it was, oh, I missed my alarm. I wanted to go out at 4, but I didn't get up till 6:30, but I'm still going to run. Well, yeah, that's cool. That's great, but you kind of failed the challenge, you know, that sort of thing. Or another thing people decide is like, you know what? That's all good, but I'm not going to go run at midnight. It's dark. It's cold. It's raining and whatever. So they like would exercise inside. They'd go on a treadmill or a bike or something. It's like, yeah, that's great, but that's not doing it. It takes a lot of discipline, a lot of mental discipline to do it. And the challenge I found was just as much, if not more, mental than it was physical.
Is there a goal of getting those 4 miles done as fast as possible to give yourself the maximum rest? Get it done as soon as you can. That way you get the rest of the time to recover.
Yeah, I did not. I found it, I just wanted to finish. And my typical pace during this was right in the neighborhood of 10-minute miles. I think I got as fast as about 9:30, and I got as slow as around 11 minutes. There were some runs. The runs that were the hardest were not the ones I expected. The hardest run of the whole thing was the fifth one. It was 8 p.m. on day one, and I thought, oh, God, my calves are going to fail me. This is not going to work. But I kept moving. I never stopped. I slowed down a lot. That was like an 11:30 mile. But I kept moving, and I got through it. And I think that was just my body hitting that wall. And then once you got past it, it was okay. I mean, my fastest run was the one I did on day two at 8 a.m., which really surprised me. It was like there was a second wind. But after that, you know, each one from then on, you're getting closer and closer, but those miles start to add up.
Is there a bunch of stretching and warm up before each segment, or do you just get up and go?
Yeah, no, I always do a warm up. I always do a warm up before every run, no matter how far it is. And I always stretch after every run. I don't like to stretch cold, so I do a warm up. It takes about 4 or 5 minutes. So you have to factor that in too. And that's part of your time. And then always, especially when you're doing all those runs, you know, on a weekend, you have to stretch after every one. And I found myself doing a lot of ice, especially on my calves and my knees, just consistently. I actually was considering doing a full ice bath, but I never got to that point.
How does nutrition work then? You can't have round table pizza you know, night one, right?
Right. You know, you kind of carb load going into it like you would for a marathon, but you're right. I mean, during the event, you have to be really careful because if you eat too heavy, that'll bog you down. And I really tried to avoid fatty foods. I tried to go with carbs. I would use energy gels at the start of some of my runs. I would use like Cliff Bars and that sort of thing between runs. And I wasn't worried about calories at all. I wanted to make sure I got a lot of calories, but a lot of it was carbs. I mean, even like at one point I had a sandwich and that felt too heavy. So I can't imagine having like a hamburger in the middle of it.
You said you would do this again. Is there anything else on your to-do list of badass human performance challenges?
I don't know if it's badass, but the thing I'm pursuing right now, I'm pursuing two things right now. One's immediate. I'm going to do a second marathon on November 15th. And the reason I'm doing that one then is that was the date. Once the San Francisco Marathon decided they weren't going to run in July, they postponed it to November. And it's supposed to be on November 15th, but then they had to cancel the whole event for this year. So I decided, you know what? I want to do a second marathon. I want to see if I can beat my time. It was just over 5 hours. And I really, it was so slow because I set out without a lot of confidence that I could do it. So I wanted to go slow and give myself the best chance to succeed. But now I really want to beat that time. And I also want to do it again just to show that I'm not like, you know, some one-hit wonder on the marathon. I want to do it twice, you know, and if I can do it twice in the same year, I'm kind of proving myself. So that's the immediate thing. The other one I'm really interested in, and it's going to be really hard, is I want to get a perfect score on the Marine fitness test. And I don't know if you're familiar with that at all. Have you seen that?
No, I'll look it up though.
Yeah, so they have a chart. What I like two things about the Marines. One, my dad was a Marine, God rest his soul. So I kind of have a soft spot for the Marine Corps. And then the other thing is the Marines have a chart where they basically give you scores by age. So, you know, 46-year-old me can find something to aim for. And they give you, there are essentially five different events. You do a plank. You have a choice. You could do a plank for 4 minutes and 20 seconds, or you could do crunches. You could do 102 minutes. Do one of those. You can do 19 uninterrupted pull-ups. That's for my age. Or you could do 68 push-ups. But the trick with the push-ups is they actually weight it so that the pull-ups score higher. So if you want the true perfect score, you actually have to do the pull-ups. And then the real challenge is the run. The run for my age, it's a 3 mile run for anyone. But for my age, I believe the time is 19 minutes. And the way I run is not built for speed, and the way I train is not for speed. So once I get past the marathon, I'm going to look more towards, okay, how do I improve my minute times? And that's going to take some time. I mean, I'm sure I could run a 1 mile pretty fast, but 3 miles at basically 6 minutes, 20 seconds, that feels like Everest right now to me.
No, it's great. And like you said, that these things you're doing for your body, they're going to translate into every area of your life.
Oh yeah. You draw a lot of confidence off it, you know, because life, as you know, is hard. And it's hard personally and it's hard professionally. And if you have these things in your quiver, I really am a big believer in it. And then all of a sudden, once you do those things, I have found mentally, I end up looking back at things and it's like, oh yeah, I've done that too. And that was pretty hard. So it reminds you of what you're capable of. And especially in this time when we have control over so few things, this is something we really can control. And really can push ourselves, you know, and that's one of the reasons I've never really been that big of a runner, believe it or not. But I love that it's accessible. You know, once the lockdown started, I was trying to think, what am I going to do for my cardio? Well, running, just go get some shoes and go run, you know, and I've really enjoyed that. You know, it's really nice to have something that's such a good, honest test of your body. And it's so readily available to you and really anyone who wants to do it.
Especially during the pandemic, just for your own sanity, you know, all the time we spend being cooped up.
Get you out of the house. It's one of my favorite parts of the day. Still is. I went on a 6 mile run this morning. It was the best part of my day. It's quiet. It's time to myself. You know, if you're stressed out about something, you could put it right into the run and get rid of it. You know, it's invaluable. And as you said, I mean, it's so rare to get out of your house these days. Especially here in the Bay Area where we take this thing pretty seriously. It's nice to have that release.
Christopher Lippi from Bay Area Rapid Transit spent how many years at KCBS?
Almost 10.
Wow. Great reporting career. Do you find yourself watching more news now, less news now?
To be honest, it's less. It's still an important part of my job. I'm on the other side of the fence now, being in public relations. So I look at the news, I look at broadcast news and listen to radio news less than I used to, just because, how do I describe it? I basically look at it for what I need in terms of BART news. I'm not going to it necessarily for my immediate informational needs. I tend to get my news off of social media, specifically Twitter. And I follow all the news organizations on that. And I get it much more rapidly and essentially on demand through that avenue than I do through broadcast.
Okay. Another one of the people chasing off radio listeners. I appreciate it.
I don't mean to, but the technology is evolving. And, you know, I actually find myself listening to satellite radio a lot more than I ever did before.
I'm so done with you.
You're doing so well.
You're having a pretty good segment with me, and then you drop that one at the end.
Right.
Hey, come up with another workout challenge and then count me in. I'm looking for the next thing to do. So you're certainly a big time inspiration.
Nice. Well, thanks for talking to me about it. I love talking about this stuff because I think as we push each other, it could be a very empowering thing. And I know I get fired up when, you know, people, I was posting about that run on Facebook. And just getting notes from people, hey, that's awesome. Can't believe it. You know, that stuff is motivating. So anything we can do to motivate each other to accomplish those goals, I think is great.
Christopher Lippi, 4 miles every 4 hours for 48 hours and a pretty cool dude on top of it. Congratulations, Chris.
Thanks so much.
Keep in touch, my friend.
Sounds good.
Thanks to Christopher Lippi from Bay Area Rapid Transit and our executive producer, Hunter Lewis, along with our sponsor, the I'm Up Coffee Company. Your best cup of coffee hasn't been roasted yet. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Play, and YouTube. Thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you next time.